if the summit produces no more than what was produced at Singapore, then I think that will be a big disappointment, and it will be regarded in Washington as a failure.
1 week to the Trump-Kim summit number two. This is Thursday, February 21st, and this is VOA Asia. I'm Ira Melman in Washington. Also ahead, the United Nations tries to decrease rising tensions between India and Pakistan over Kashmir, and an attempt to get those in the digital age in touch with ancient Asian art. It's all on today's VOA Asia. With the second summit between U.S. President Donald Trump and North Korean leader Kim Jong-un just a week away, final preparations are underway in Vietnam for the February 27th and 28th talks in Hanoi. It remains unclear what the outcome between the two leaders will yield, but the former North Korean deputy ambassador to Britain, Tae Young-ho, told reporters Tuesday that Pyongyang's long-term goal was to remove the U.S. and the United Nations presence from the Korean Peninsula. We welcome to VOA Asia Scott Snyder, Senior Fellow for Korea Studies and Director of the Program on U.S.-Korea Policy at the Council on Foreign Relations. Scott, what do you expect from this?
There are a range of outcomes, I think, that we can expect still even a week away from the summit, as it is the case that that working level negotiations are continuing between the U.S. and North Korea. If the summit produces no more than what was produced at Singapore, then I think that will be a big disappointment, and it will be regarded in Washington as a failure. If the two sides are able to make a small deal in which they produce some kind of roadmap for denuclearization and peace, accompanied by a set of symbolic measures on each side that can show seriousness of purpose with regards to the shared objectives of normalization, peace, and complete denuclearization, then I think that will be enough to keep a process going. And I imagine that the U.S. side has tried to explore the prospects for a larger deal that would exceed expectations around the world. But I think that the prospects for that larger deal would really depend on the ability of the North Koreans to make larger concessions up to now, there's not really a signal that they would be prepared to make.
Well, yesterday, as you know, on Tuesday, President Trump said he's willing to wait for complete denuclearization. And today, on Wednesday, he said that he expects to meet with Kim Jong-un again after their planned summit next week, and also said he would like to remove sanctions on North Korea, which is something that North Korea apparently has talked about, but that again, needs a trade for denuclearization. Where does that all stand?
Well, I think that President Trump has been, sending a lot of positive vibes in the direction of Kim Jong-un. He hasn't really played the heavy. And I think that includes what he said last week about being satisfied with testing. It's not a problem necessarily that, we have a longer time frame for a denuclearization process, but it is absolutely essential that a process be put into place in which we can see measurable progress in the direction of an easing of tensions around the peninsula, the establishment of peace, and serious efforts toward denuclearization of North Korea. What's really interesting is that the U.S. is asked to see the whole pie through the demand for a comprehensive declaration post-Singapore. The North Koreans have countered with an offer of a piece of the pie, which is essentially the possible internationally verified inspection of Yongbyon. It might be fine as a first step to eat a piece of the pie together, but it's only going to be satisfying if indeed the process continues to the point where both sides are able to enjoy the whole pie.
Scott Snyder is Senior Fellow for Korea Studies, Director of the Program on U.S.-Korea Policy at the Washington-based Council on Foreign Relations. Scott, thanks for doing this with us.
Sure. Glad to talk to you.
These are among the top Asia stories you'll find right now on voanews.com. Hanoi's summit may advance North Korea's objectives, some other experts say. China faces challenges in containing a swine flu infection. An okay for direct U.S. flights moves Vietnam into the economic fast lane. Taiwan says no compromise on democracy after opposition's China peace overture. And China closes Tibet to foreigners for sensitive anniversaries. This is VOA Asia. We continue now. A recent terrorist attack in the hotly contested Kashmir region is threatening to become a flashpoint between rivals India and Pakistan. This suicide attack on Indian security forces serving in Kashmir killed dozens, with an Islamist group operating within Pakistan claiming responsibility. Margaret Bashir is VOA's United Nations correspondent. She told our Doug Bernard that both the Indian and Pakistani UN ambassadors are pointing fingers, waiting for the other side to act.
So there was an attack on Indian security forces in the disputed Kashmir territory of Jammu and Kashmir. And so 40 Indian security personnel were killed. It was a huge attack. The terrorist group Jaish-e-Mohammed, also known as JEM, has claimed responsibility for it. And according to the United Nations, Jaish-e-Mohammed is a listed terrorist group that is based in Pakistan. So the Indian government is, you know, very upset about it, and Pakistan is saying it's not our fault. And so this has heightened tensions between these two countries that are, you know, have a history of difficult neighborly relations, and they are, and it's complicated by the fact that they're both nuclear power countries.
Right. I understand that India is not just very upset, but that they've taken steps to respond. Is that correct?
So as I just spoke with the Indian ambassador to the United Nations a couple of hours ago here in our studio in New York, and I asked him if, you know, India has said they're going to make a jaw-breaking response. The rhetoric has been very strong from the Indian government. I asked him, is a military response from India, is that on the table? And he said, you know, I don't know where you got this idea. And look at the statements we've made. Yes, we've said we'll respond. But, you know, we've said things that we will take into account. And I can get into that in a minute. And he said, and we're awaiting those responses. We're a responsible state. It's not our tradition to respond in haste. But we will respond in a manner and in a way we decide to respond. So it sounds like they're waiting for Pakistan to take some action. They've said they want Pakistan to stop allowing JEM to use its territory to carry out and plan attacks. They've also said that they want the international community to denounce terrorism, clearly condemn terrorist acts, and they want them to list leaders of these entities, of these terrorist groups. There's a guy named Masood Azhar, who's the leader of Jaish-e-Mohammed, and there's a buzz that they would like the UN to list him on their on their list of terrorists. So perhaps if they get sort of these steps, that might diffuse their response a bit.
My understanding is you've also spoken with the Pakistani ambassador.
I did.
What are they saying?
So Ambassador Malia Lodi, the ambassador of Pakistan, she told VOA on Tuesday that, you know, they want dialogue with India. But India has this policy of stop the terror and then we'll talk. And she's saying that we think that's really irresponsible, especially in such a fraught situation. We think we have to have dialogue. And as far as Pakistan's, you know, checkered history with terrorism, I mean, they had Osama bin Laden living in their country for over a decade. She says, no, we're victims of terrorism too, and we're working to stop it, and our prime minister has said he won't allow terrorists to use our territory. So, you know, she denies that they are responsible for this.
Finally, I know that this is of great concern for both Indians and Pakistanis, just given the fraught nature of Jammu and Kashmir. What is the rest of the world community saying or thinking about this? You're up at the UN. Is there concern outside of the region about what may happen here?
Sure, there's always concern when two nuclear-powered nations are mad at each other. There's always concern. The Secretary General issued a second statement on Wednesday condemning the attack, and this time he was calling for both governments of India and Pakistan to exercise maximum restraint to ensure the situation does not further deteriorate. So I think there is international concern that this is not continuing to boil, and it's not cooling off between the two of them.
VOA's Margaret Bashir speaking with us from the UN in New York. Happening now in Asia, Huawei's founder has denied allegations that the Chinese telecom giant participates in intelligence gathering. He also claims the Huawei CFO arrest was politically motivated in two statements that further complicate Huawei's relationship with China and the United States. Stay up to date with VOA. This is VOA Asia. Gang Huyag Natsag, also known as Gana, has dedicated his life to spreading Mongolian culture abroad. The Buddhist ritual dance masks he makes are displayed in museums outside his homeland, and he tours with them around the world. VOA's June So caught up with the artist, who was dubbed the Mongolian Cultural Ambassador, at his home studio outside of Washington, D.C. Carol Pearson narrates her report.
This mask named Utansekhusin Toslakh, which is a helper of the red protector. This is to protect the people from bad spirit.
Khanleg Natsuk was born in Ulaanbaatar, the capital of Mongolia. He immigrated to the U.S. in 2002. He's been making Buddhist ritual dance masks for more than two decades.
I made the old white man's mask in 1997. Then I decided to build 108-piece masks. It took me 10 years, and I completed in 2007 the old ritual 108 some dance masks.
Sam is one of the Buddhist rituals that's been practiced in Mongolia from the early 1800s. But the ritual was banned when communist repression peaked in Mongolia in the late 1930s.
It destroyed more than 800 temples, and including of course a lot of Buddhist objects. Between that, it's a lot of masks destroyed during that time. And then I really want to recreate 108 some.
Each mask represents a different character and role.
Example, the old white man is giving to people the long life, very knowledgeable, wisdom, and teaching to people. When I wear the mask and when I'm dancing and I'm trying to tell that story through my movement and dancing.
While Natsuk recreated the masks, his family and friends helped him by reproducing the masks' costumes and elaborate ornaments.
My mother is a very famous seam dresser, and also my father was a very artistic person. I learned a lot from them. Myself, because I studied in art school.
It takes a month for him to create a mask using clay and layers of papier-mâché.
When he's making the mask, it's not easy. It's a very complete job. It takes the time and sitting and making the masks. Then I think about that character, that mask, and peacefully inside. Kind of the meditation given to me.
Natsuk also created a music and dance ensemble called Han Boget. The group has performed in more than 50 countries at festivals, theaters, and museums.
I would like to introduce Mongolian culture over the world, through my art, through my masks, and that's one of my biggest goals. And of course, we need to preserve our culture. That's the very important.
Natsuk has a dream project called the World Peace Pagoda. He hopes to build large-scale peace education centers, one in Mongolia and another outside Washington.
If the people enjoyable and peaceful, if they themselves inside the world, then it's, we think about outside, our world will be in peaceful. That's based on Buddhist philosophy. It's the for us need, for everyone, because it's, our world is unique, only the home for us.
For producer June So, I'm Carol Pearson, VOA News, Washington.
Coming up, getting millennials in touch with a 1,000-year-old Asian art form. You're listening to VOA Asia.
News is mobile, and so are you. Get VOA on the go. Get VOA on Google Currents. Get VOA News specifically made for your tablet and smartphone. Clean, simple, fast. Now available for Android or Apple phones or tablets. Download the Google Currents app for free today. Get VOA on Google Currents at voanews.com/currents.
This news alert from VOA Asia, the president of Argentina is making a state visit to Vietnam as the two nations work to strengthen their bilateral trade relationship. The two presidents agreed on the need to continue strengthening economic commercial ties, cooperation, and coordination in international forums. This is VOA Asia. VOA Asia continues. Dating back more than 1,000 years, the style of Chinese landscape painting that uses brush and ink has evolved over time. This traditional art form is evolving once again in an exhibit called Lightscapes, Re-envisioning the San Shui Hua. It is on display at the Chinese American Museum in Los Angeles. The goal, to connect the new digital generation to this type of art and capture its essence in a new way. VOA's Elizabeth Lee has the story.
This exhibit forces the viewer to slow down and escape into a different world. That's one of the objectives of the ancient Chinese masters of San Shui Hua, or landscape paintings.
It was for all these artists to create a world which they want to hide, avoid, escape from the reality. So they create a mountain. Imagine they could live there.
Trained in both Chinese and Western art styles, Nick Dong and Ji Chongwu attempt to capture the essence of landscape paintings with technology and modern materials. In this contemporary approach to what's real and what's not, these plastic boxes are used with a slowly moving light to cast shadows on the wall.
But if we see this through the light, through the different perspective, we could see there's another world behind that.
That other world is this. Shadows that look more real and solid than the actual boxes. It's symbolic of the modern digital age, says Wu.
We spend most of the time in our daily life, no matter to work, our social life, or our entertainment, all on this cyberspace.
That space is an escape for many people, similar to the landscape paintings. To capture the philosophical elements of the landscape painting, magnets are used to levitate objects to show that there is a force between everything in nature. This art installation is Dong's representation of heaven.
In my mind, heaven is a place of selfless. Eventually, once you enter the installation, at first you'll see a lot of your reflection, but once you sit down, you trigger the mechanism of the room. The mirror actually starts to reflect, and you yourself will disappear within the space. All you have is this empty, wide open space. And for me, it's the ultimate evolution.
These pieces are ways the artists hope the modern day viewer will be able to experience what the masters of the landscape paintings were trying to achieve.
They were able to say, we're seeking a spiritual outlet. We're seeking a way to refine the spirit and refine the soul, really. So this work you know, today it's hard to have that experience with the traditional artworks because they're such a contained device. You see them in a museum under glass and they're hard to approach.
Contemporary artists hope their use of lighting and experimental materials will make an ancient art form more tangible and real. Elizabeth Lee, VOA News, Los Angeles.
Here's a news alert from VOA Asia. The president of China, Xi Jinping, met Wednesday with Iran's head of parliament to strengthen their commitment to bilateral ties with Iran, as well as support for the Iran nuclear deal. China is also trying to balance its relations in the Middle East between rivals Iran and Saudi Arabia, one of its chief suppliers of crude oil. You'll find more at VOA Asia Facebook. This is VOA Asia. The Academy of Motion Picture Arts and Sciences has nominated 8 movies in the category of Best Picture. One will get the coveted award. So what are the elements that make a movie the best picture of the year? VOA's Penelope Pulu spoke with award-winning playwright, director, and founding director of the AFI Silver Theater, Murray Horowitz, about the chances of some of this year's nominees making history in the 91st Academy Awards.
You have become close to Abigail.
She is a viper. You're jealous.
The Favourite, a dark comedy on scheming politics and power struggle during Queen Anne's royal court in the 18th century, and Roma, a nostalgic take on domestic help in a middle-class household in Mexico City, lead the pack with 10 Oscar nominations each. But the number of nominations does not guarantee the winner for Best Picture, considering 8,200 Academy members from different backgrounds are voting in the category, says playwright and director Murray Horowitz.
You may have a songwriter who wrote a song for one movie, won the Oscar, or was nominated for the Oscar, gets to vote now. I don't know if you're nominated, I think you get to vote. And so that person, who may not know anything about film, but is a great musician, gets to vote for Best Picture.
What's the lyric?
Horowitz says some vote for their friends, others for or against a studio or production company. But those who look at the merits of a Best Picture, he says, traditionally they look at the film's cinematography, film editing, direction, and script. But not always.
Step into the spotlight. Wakanda forever!
If Black Panther won Best Picture, I wouldn't be upset.
Nominated for 7 Oscars, that would be a first for a superhero flick. But then again, Ryan Coogler's Black Panther is no ordinary superhero movie. Artistic acclaim aside, it has become a cultural phenomenon that celebrates the African and African-American identity. But how does it stack up next to the competition?
Roma's a kind of masterpiece. I mean, it really is. The things that it has to say about human dignity, about the value of human life, about our complacency in a middle-class or upper-middle-class environment, I mean, those things are all extremely powerful.
This is madness.
Sometimes a lady likes to have some fun.
And then there's The Favorite, checking all the right nomination boxes.
I love the fact that The Favorite featured women in all the most significant roles.
A film's perspective on race may cost some of the contenders the coveted award. Though beautifully executed, 5 Oscar nominee Green Book, a moving dramedy about the bond between a real-life eclectic African-American music composer and his uncouth white driver during a music tour in the South during the Jim Crow era, has been criticized for whitewashing America's dark historic period.
I'm very sympathetic to people who have said, and I agree with people who have said, Green Book is a movie that makes white people feel good about themselves.
On the other hand, says Horowitz, Spike Lee's 6 Oscar nominee, Black Klansman, a blistering satire on racism in America, has been criticized by some for over-politicizing the 1970s real-life story of an African-American cop infiltrating the Ku Klux Klan.
You have been listening to VOA Asia. You can get our program on iTunes and SoundCloud, download our podcast, and take VOA Asia with you. Find us at voanews.com and let us hear from you, VOA Asia Facebook, as well as our email at voaasia@voanews.com. Thank you for joining us. I'm Ira Melman in Washington. Enjoy your day.